from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
What's happening, Mr. Falone?
What up, what up, what up?
I don't think I told you this. It has been a while. And good morning. Happy Friday to everyone tuning in to Two CISOs having a conversation on a Friday morning. Today we're talking Zero Trust. We're talking Assume Breach. One of the big principles of Zero Trust is always assume breach. But before I do that, I don't think I told you this, but this is the last show from this studio. Because what? This studio is getting revamped on Monday. It's going through a 2 to 3 week reconstruction, which is very, very exciting. And come May, I'll be in a brand new studio. Exciting. Same location, just different. Look different. Feel different.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
It'll have better acoustics, I hope. So what's happening, buddy?
As you put in your new studio, are you going to be checking for hidden cameras and hidden microphones and assuming that your studio is breached?
You know, I am, although the studio's in my house, and if you make it onto my perimeter and you don't get shot by my sniper rifle, that's a whole other issue, right? So good luck getting a camera or mic in my studio, but I'll do some assuming breach exercises from the construction workers that have been here. You know, I don't know what their plans are.
Well, you got to have that detect and respond system on your network looking for suspicious traffic.
You know what I think is really interesting is this whole work from home situation has introduced a slew of risks, which, you know, mature, responsible organizations have found a way to kind of manage those, but others have not. And that's been one of those challenging moments for a lot of organizations to go, is VPN enough? Is, you know, IPsec tunneling enough? And I don't know that I don't know that it is anymore, because identity is the new perimeter. And if I take over your identity, then of kind of riding the same highway you're riding.
Yeah.
And am I off with that thought?
No, I don't think you're off. And I think that's where, like, using IAM solutions, as we talked about last time, with least privilege is key. But then on top of that, you need to be monitoring what that identity is doing, where that identity is coming from. And IPsec tunneling is not enough, because most people or a lot of organizations these days are using cloud services. And you're not tunneling all of their traffic back to their IDS system or back to their corporate headquarters. Instead, you're coming in via CASBs or cloud tunnels, or even not at all, and going directly to the cloud service provider via open internet access. And I think if you're not monitoring the endpoints properly, that's where they start to lose control, because that's where your identity starts, right? The endpoint that the user's on. And if you have control of that without any visibility, then you can take over the user's identity.
Yeah. You bring up something that I think is huge, which is, if you think of the start of every single attack, of every single sequence in the kill chain, it really starts with phishing. It really starts with getting some human to make some mistake at some point that validates information. That's one aspect. The other one, poor password management, meaning your users reuse their passwords. You're not really monitoring the fact that they're reusing their passwords. They become victims of a secondary breach. The threat actors realizing that this person's username and password are a victim in a supply chain breach somewhere down the road that didn't impact your company, impacted a handful of users, right? And then they go on a password spraying attack. And they go, let's try. And thanks to all the vendors that put customer logos on their website, like, these brands trust us. I know what brands you work with because now I have your employee credentials. So now I'm going to a HubSpot. I'm going to whatever SaaS cloud product you're using. And I'm trying the same username and password. If you're not enforcing MFA, you don't have SSO, I'm in. And the moment I'm in, at that point, I'm kind of looking through your data. I'm sitting, I'm observing, I'm watching. You're not monitoring that SSO log. You're not monitoring either that SSO or that SaaS login. And, you know, I've seen some security teams say, well, that's their responsibility. No, no, their responsibility is to give you a service. Your responsibility is to monitor who on your side has access to that service. They can't know because they don't, they're not connected to your Active Directory. They don't know who your users really are. As far as they're
concerned. And they shouldn't.
Right. As far as they're concerned, if Chris Fallon comes in and it's the right username, the right password, he's in.
Yeah. Unless you put limitations on where that identity can access, what machines they can use using MFA, or even using passkeys as a different approach, you're really just leaving yourself open to them coming in. And then on top of that, if you're not collecting those logs to aggregate everything together, for your systems to alert you on password spraying or things like that, then you're flying blind.
Yeah, you're flying blind. You're really hurting yourself, and then you're hoping that someone else is gonna be able to do this. And again, I mean, let me just put it to you like this: this is a tall order for any security team, right? We're talking about it like it's really simple. It's a really, really tall order. Because shadow IT still exists, but now we have shadow SaaS. And shadow SaaS is someone in marketing setting up a SaaS program to help them create content now using AI or create images or whatever it is somewhere. But it's given them access to a network, to a username, to a password. Those companies aren't properly vetted, right? Security isn't properly vetting them. And so what ends up happening is they become victims of a breach that they don't know about. By the time they notify, or they're not really notifying the company, they're notifying the user. Most users, I mean, how many people get a breach notification and go, oh, I should do something about it? Very few.
Yeah.
Very few. And so there's so many ways to fail here, which kind of goes to the plan of, you've got to really understand your footprint, your internet facing footprint first, your inventory, your assets, your applications, internal, external, being used everywhere. You've got to build those relationships. You've got to cross those bridges. You've got to have those conversations. And some of them are uncomfortable. Some of them are not fun to have. Some of them introduce a lot of new risks to the business. But that is one of the challenges here, folks, and if, for a lot of practitioners. And then you've got to be able to manage it all. And there's a lot of really smart people with behind really great partnerships that can offer you tools to do that. I'm not going to drop names, but I'm just saying they exist. There really are companies out there that exist to help you manage that. Just got to find them, scope them, and make sure it's the right tool for you. Not every tool is right for everyone to solve the same problem, because not everyone has the same problem, but the problem isn't put together the same way.
Yeah, I've talked to several companies recently that kind of monitor for that shadow SaaS, and they do it in different ways. So that's why you have to really understand what's the best way for you. And then the next thing is you need to limit your lateral movement. You need to limit once an identity is breached, what can that identity do? Can they access only certain applications, or do you give them live access to everything? What do you do? Do you segment your network? Have you been doing that? These are all strategies that you can use, because you're trying to assume that your threat actor's in. So, okay, if your identity's been breached, what's next? Well, where can they connect to? And then how can you limit that? Can segment the network, keep, say, less critical users away from critical applications if they don't need to use it, put them in different clouds? How do you approach that?
Yeah, so you bring up a very, I think you bring up a very common challenge that exists. And I think, you know, when you look at kind of the overall footprint, you really have to look at the different business departments and then how you enable business before you come up with a solution. And so this isn't a one product solution. And I hate to say that because you and I both know that I don't want to have 30 security vendors and three doing the same thing, but sometimes you don't have a choice. I really believe that sometimes you don't have a choice. Depending on how your business operates, security, IT, all the kind of foundational support to ensure business does what business does. You're a business enabler. You're not a business restrictor. And so that mind shift's got to happen. And based on based on your question, Chris, I think I'm going down the business enabler route. And that business enabler route for me is what's right for every critical business unit. And then again, you've got to understand what parts of the business generate the revenue and then create the products and manage the secret sauce that helps your company be what it is. And then you've got to identify that those people are special. And I'm sorry to say that to everyone listening. There are special people in your organization. Yes, there are special people in your organization. There are special departments in your organization. And if you try to fight those battles, sometimes you lose. And more often than not, you lose those battles and you find yourself demoralized, demotivated. You've really burned some bridges in the process of trying to do something that you know is right, but you're thinking in the process of security and not security through business enablement or business enablement through security. And so you have to look at the problem. You've got to look at the risks. You've got to identify and understand the business. And then you've got to go through the process of saying, you know what, we're probably going to need two solutions for this. And when I sit down and talk to the CFO, when I sit down and talk to my boss, the CIO, the CTO, the CFO, whoever that is that I report to, the general counsel, I'm presenting these problems in the business enablement part of the in the business enablement side of this, right? So do I want to have to spend $100,000 to solve this problem? No. Could I solve it with 50? Sure, I could. But then I limit business productivity, effectiveness, and efficiency. And you don't want me to do that because that $50,000 savings could cost the company millions in productivity, effectiveness, and efficiency. So are you weighing your tool selection and your budgeting versus that? Because that's a great way to go to the business and say, I need $50,000 to keep the business $3 million efficient. That's a no-brainer. Everyone's signing off on that.
And if they're not, I just talked about that in the FR Secure CISSP mentorship course, is understanding that. And you mentioned earlier understanding your assets. Well, part of understanding your assets is understanding the process flow of how value gets created, how users need to access the different aspects of the application. And then that way, you can create application flows that enable the business, but don't limit them, while creating that segmentation of your network at the same time. And you can do that application specific, you can do that network specific, or you could do both. And that's really up to you on how you create that. And the other thing that you can do is you can use user entity behavior analytics, another type of product to use, but this kind of looks for the anomalies in your user behavior. If James Azar is all of a sudden downloading a bunch of stuff, that might be a red flag that they're trying to leave, or that might be a red flag that you're trying to get around your business systems because you're not properly enabling them, and they need access to that data while they're on the go or while they're servicing clients, and you're not providing the best way for them to do that. So they're doing it the way that they know how, and that might not be the most secure way.
Yeah, the point you just made is absolutely 100% should be written on every whiteboard for every practitioner, right? You got to have an application flow, and then you've got to have a data flow. And if you don't have an application flow and a data flow, then you're really playing blind. It's kind of like early cyber. Early cyber, give me your network diagram. But I want your IT and network diagram, an infrastructure diagram. Why do you need that? Because that's how I know what's supposed to go where and how. And in today's world, you not only need those two, you need your data diagram and you need your application diagram. And then you need to be able to go to every single business and give me your user roles and diagrams. And then you've got to go to HR and match the job description that you got from someone to the job description they have and go do these mesh. Yes or no? Right? And if they mesh, great. And if they don't, then now you've got to start identifying those gaps. And why do those gaps exist? And in today's, you know, we were just talking about how hard today's job market really is for so many companies and for so many people, right, Chris? I mean, you've been interviewing and you've been really putting yourself out there looking for your next role. And hopefully, you know, fingers crossed you find it really, really soon. But it's been a really, really tough market. Obviously, a lot of people are looking at it. And then as a practitioner, you go into an organization and you're going to be short-staffed, underfunded, and expected to still perform at the same level that you would anywhere else. And this brings in the big kind of discussion part of assuming breach, right? This all kind of brings it to there, that you've got to operate under the assumption that someone's in your network and something funky's happening. And the decentralization of the kill chain and the as a service marketplace for cyber criminals makes it that much harder to keep track of what's going from one place to the other. And when you have those difficulties from one place to the other, and those difficulties exist, and you don't have those abilities to view and understand everything that's happening, you find yourself in a position where there's a breach in your environment and you don't know it because it's decentralized, it's decoupled, and it's separate events happening in five different places.
And that's why you need like enhanced monitoring these days. You need to be able to pull in your logs from all your software as a service, from all your third-party supply chain vendors that you're using. And you need to be able to look at them in real time quickly and have alerts pop up, as well as have your team be able to understand what those alerts mean. And then if there is something that needs to happen, you need to be able to react and respond really quickly by shutting down either access or identities on the fly.
Yep, and you've got to almost automate that using AI. There you go. I said a buzzword, y'all. AI. You've absolutely
got to. I was trying not to.
You know, well, but the thing about it is, right? Realistically speaking, you've got to be able to shut that stuff down, right? And you want to shut it down. You know, you want to shut it down right off the bat, and you don't always have humans running an operation, and so. What you want to say is shut it down. And if we get a ticket, we'll open it back up after we get the use case and we've documented it, rather than keep it open and investigate it the next morning. You know, most ransomware, I believe, is launched between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Well, that ties into two things, the time zones of your threat actors. And then them going, okay, when are most people not looking? When they're closed, when they're sleeping, when they have...
When do police raids happen? When do police raids happen? Between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m., because that's when you're deepest asleep. And even if you're working graveyard, that's when you're most likely tired. Merle's got a good question here. Merle's asking, what are our thoughts on SSPMs? What do you think, Chris?
Let's define that acronym for those that are not looking, and that's security posture management. And yes, that is critical in the world of using SaaS. So understanding your external attack surface is critical. Understanding your posture management with using APIs is critical. Before it used to be, you need to tunnel into everything. Now it's just an IPsec to an API. And most people can't look at API logs fast enough to be able to shut down data transfers. I mean, this is machine to machine communication that is happening faster than humans can react. Your thoughts?
Yeah, completely agree. So here's the thing about SaaS SSPM to me. One, I've done a lot of webinars on this topic with companies that do this, and I've attended a whole bunch of those. You know, software posture management is one aspect of giving you insights into your SaaS. But then again, if you're not managing identity as part of that, if you're not managing data as part of that, then it's almost similar to like a risk recon or a security scorecard. Sorry, it's kind of giving you a score that you know, no one can ever explain to you how they come up with it for the person or the company you're trying to assess risk from. And the same applies with your SaaS. And so SaaS can give you some SSPM can give you some good information, and it's vital to give you kind of an overall picture, but it's not the only one. I still like to interpret logs. I still like to look at anomalies in logs. I still want to feed those into a SIM. I still want to be able to use tools that are out there, like, you know, that are generative AI or machine learning powered tools that are looking at the logs and they're kind of highlighting anomalies by looking at historical data. And because I think SSPM kind of looks at the now, whereas in with logs, you're really looking historical and you can see the changes. And if those changes kind of veer off what would be an acceptable percentage of change, that kind of throws you off right off the bat. I don't know that SSPMs are capable of doing that today. Just saying, like
you said, there's a lot of tools out there. And you brought up a critical point is from tying together, knowing your applications, knowing your data flows, and then being able to classify and label what's critical data, what are critical applications, and then using your external security posture to tie those three in together. Now you can go, okay, so we have a critical application serving sensitive data using a vendor with poor security practices. That should be a red flag. And sometimes you can change it. If you're a big enough spender with that vendor, you can force them to update their security posture. If you're a small pea in a big pond, you can't really do much about it other than the things you can control, which is your identity and your data flows. So if your vendor has poor security posture, you can choose not to put your data there. And that's a decision that you can use, as small as it is. Don't spend your money there. Move to another provider.
And I think that's harder. That's easier said than done, Chris. I'm gonna push back a little bit on that because
it's a hard move.
In most cases, security doesn't have the authority, right? If you're using a SaaS service that you know your application team's using, and I'm giving an example, and I'm not saying that I endorse one or the other. You're a fan of GitHub. Someone else is a fan of GitLab. But you go, I don't want to use GitLab. I want to use GitHub. That's not a decision security could make, right? That's not even a decision security will likely influence unless, you know, we're seeing that trend from CISO to CTO, you know, Jamil with Equifax now going there, and we've seen it with Fidelity National Bank and a few others that he highlighted in his post this week, Jamil, of kind of CISO starting to take over more technology, more data focused roles, because once you understand the tech, once you understand how the business operates and you're security minded, you tend to be a more well-rounded leader in that department than someone who's just data, 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 or tech, 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 or application, application, application. Completely agree. I wear two hats. I love wearing two hats. I think it makes me a better, and a more consummate professional at what I do, because I'm able to speak the way I am because I have to wear those two hats, right? And I think a lot of times in security, we are the security hat, but we miss the business hat, or we miss the tech hat, or we miss all the, you know, we're thinking audit, we're thinking compliance, we're thinking regulatory, we're thinking all these different things, risks, and so forth. And the business is wearing one hat, revenue, ROI, right? They're not thinking about everything else. All of that stuff is the cost of doing business. And so you kind of got to weigh both. That's my opinion, is you've really got to be able to weigh both. Sometimes you don't have that choice to switch from one SaaS provider to another, because you've got to be able to build mitigation. You've got to be able to get visibility. And again, I think this is where smart, experienced security professionals can go and present to the business in a way to say, we're investing our budget in addressing all of these risks. And by investing X amount of dollars, we've reduced X amount of dollars worth of risk to the business. And in our last exercise that we did, we were able to do X, Y, Z, and the business was able to recover in this X amount of time based on our whatever the case may be. Right now, you've kind of reflected that to the business in business terms. Then you've got to be able to go and say, however, we understand that the business needs to use 1, 2, 3. And in order to solve 1, 2, 3, which introduce this new risk to the business, we've got to be able to make these investments. And we just don't have the money for these investments. We need the money for these investments, right? And we need the buy-in that once we make these investments, they're going to get adopted. And so there's that.
I think the key to that is saying, okay, this is what you want to do. This is how you achieve value. This is what we need to do to allow you to do that safely, not just focus on security, but allow you to get that revenue safely. James, as we wrap up, what are your three top tips for assume breach?
Asset management, log interpretation, eyes on the glass. What about yours?
Definitely eyes on the glass, with your critical assets in mind. Then from there, you monitor your data flows and your identity flows.
I love that. Well, we got a hard stop. Both Chris and I have stuff, you know, meetings coming up here in a few minutes. We want to say thank you for everyone. We know Chris and I can go for another hour and see your comments and likes and questions. And thank you for everyone who tuned in. We're trying to do these every Friday. Unfortunately, our day jobs, our family lives, and everything else has kind of interfered with us being able to do those consistently. We apologize. But if you do have a topic you want us to cover, we'll do our best. And we'll definitely put it as part of our schedule and cadence. If you want to join and be a guest on one of these to talk about something, we'd love to have you. Just reach out to me or Chris through our DMs on LinkedIn, or you can go to our website, go check out cpfcoaching.com. That's Chris is way now to make some cash while he waits for his last role. So and then obviously,
wow, well, I'm gonna retire after this.
I hope so. number one. And number two, go check out our Substacks, cpfcoaching.substack.com, jamesazar.substack.com. A lot of great articles. And then for pain, you can actually replay this from the very beginning. It'll be on both of our YouTubes. It's on X. It's right here. You can catch it. It'll also be on our podcast listening platforms. Thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in today. We'll be back next Friday. I hope. Yep. And then, by the way, big announcement. One more minute. Chris is going to be guest hosting the morning program the week of April 23rd through the 25th while I'm on Passover break. So really excited. Y'all get a piece of Chris Tuesday through Woo-hoo. Thursday, which is going to be really, really exciting. Make sure
to do coffee cup cheers.
Love it. Love it. Thanks, y'all. Have a great weekend. Happy Friday. And see y'all Monday, 9 a.m. with the news right here on all your favorite podcast listening platforms and social media channels. Chris, have a great weekend, buddy. Good luck. Thanks, kick ass. Bye. All right. Talk. Bye.
We We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.